Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by Valicia Stachetti, Senior Cybersecurity Engineer with the CIS Controls. Valicia, how are you?
I'm good, Sean. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Now, Valicia, we had to get this episode in rather quick. Could you just give us a quick update on you and our growing family, as it were, at the CIS community?
Yes, I am having a baby in less than 48 hours. So this is really timely, literally.
So this may be a podcast.
I'm hoping we get through it. No surprises.
Absolutely wonderful. Well, congratulations to you and your family.
Thank you.
And to our audience, we are assessing, and we have really, and this one, Valicia, very, very important when we're talking about those organizations that are really stepping into necessarily their cybersecurity journey, right? What does day one, step one, dollar one look like in terms of necessarily applying a control framework? Obviously, our recommendation would be to start with the CIS Controls Implementation Group 1. But before we jump into day one, step one, dollar one, Valicia, why don't you just give us a quick explanation of the CIS Critical Security Controls and why they're important?
Yeah, so quite simply put, it's a prioritized set of actions that defend against the most common attacks. And it's not just a nice thing to say, right? We have a lot of data to back up how they defend against those common attacks, and that's through the community defense model that we've put out. But overall, there are 18 top-level controls. These are things like inventory of assets, data management, high-level areas like that. And then you drill down into each control, and they're made up of several actions. So things, these are called safeguards. There's 153 of them. These are things like inventorying your assets or allow listing software. Backing up your data. So those things are the actions that make up the controls, right? They're the things that you need to do in order to satisfy the controls. But the main purpose of the CIS controls is really to build upon and improve upon your organization's cybersecurity program. So it's not just a list of good things to do, like Tony Sager likes to say. They're prioritized, practical, effective, and attainable things that an organization can do in order to further their journey into cybersecurity. I think the other thing is that the best part is they're consensus-based, so they're not just created in a vacuum. They're really involve heavily the community and getting their feedback to make it a better product.
Wonderful. And you're, again, a huge part of that ability for us to not only build out a control set, but one of the big things that you had done and contribute continuously, I mean, this is through the products, through the community defense model, but when we get to dollar one, was some really impressive work you had done about really the implications and the cost of implementation of security controls, specifically around the CIS controls and an implementation strategy, as well as looking at costing and ability to necessarily ascribe to what we recommend, but how to do that practically and operationalize. Again, phenomenal work in that space, Valicia. But we'll get to that. I'm setting us up for the crescendo in that space with your work there. But when we think day one, so we've got an organization necessarily there, they need or understand they need to mitigate risk in the perspective of cybersecurity posture assessment. What do you think an organization should do necessarily before starting implementing necessarily the controls, or really what they should do to assess their current posture and readiness to implement the controls?
Yeah, so, well, you gave the answer away, right? It's assessment. And that's really what it comes down to, because in order to go anywhere, we need to assess where we currently are, right? So some may be starting out, some may be way more established in their cybersecurity program, but it really doesn't matter where you're at. If you're starting to adopt the CIS controls, you need that point in time assessment of where you are and then where you want to go. And it, you know, sometimes taking that step back to assess that can be really healthy. Kind of like taking a cross-country road trip, right? You wouldn't just hop in the car and start driving to California, or maybe you would, but you want to plan out routes, what's the best, the quickest way to get there, and things like that. So each organization, this can look different, right? You can start with a controls assessment. You can start with a risk assessment. There's all different ways. Generally, we recommend the organizations, as far as adopting the CIS controls, start out with an assessment against the, like assessing against the CIS controls to see where they stand. And then once they determine that, they can do things like a CIS risk assessment method, or RAM, where they can go one step further and assess against risk, right? So when you determine maybe that you have 150 safeguards to implement, you're not going to just start doing all of them tomorrow. You're going to have to prioritize things, because in reality, you can't boil the ocean, right? So you have to start small and grow from there. And you know, another thing too is that with a risk assessment method, or CIS RAM, that also helps you determine if a control is reasonable, or a safeguard's reasonable to implement. So for example, if you only bring in $500,000 in revenue, and a control costs $1 million to implement, you're not going to maybe implement that, because it could put you out of business. And that can determine if it's reasonable or not for your organization to implement it. And then also it looks to protect the actual customers and stakeholders that you are also responsible for protecting, right? It's not just internal people and assets that you're trying to protect. You also have customers and a lot of external stakeholders as well.
Absolutely agree. And I think one of the other elements there, Felicia, I just want to just pull on apart just for a second, is the number of tools that can help you down this journey necessarily. I think CSAT, from the control self-assessment capability, and then SysRAM to actualize, understand, and contextualize your risk to identify where should I be focused first, and where does that necessarily the biggest return on security investment come from? Very important questions to ask, right? Because it's not just, oh, let me start with control 1.1, and I'll just go through incrementally and just do each one over a period of time. I think you need to be informed necessarily, making those types of decisions, looking at optimization to your point. If I'm not using a map, necessarily I could be going in the wrong direction, and it's not going to be efficient. It's going to take me longer to achieve that success. But following necessarily a prescribed approach, I think really is potentially, and this was going to be one of the questions, Felicia, is, you know, a common challenge that an organization faces when they're thinking about day one in terms of implementing the control. And I think you defined it perfectly, is lay this path, understand where you necessarily are, where you want to be, and you can address that through IG1, which takes all of those AT controls and puts them into something more palatable. You mentioned you're boiling the ocean in respect to those thoughts as well. But overcoming them is, I think, with information and looking and doing your due diligence in terms of an initial assessment. So day one starts you on a path that you can continuously improve over time, right? That then moves as necessarily into our thoughts on step one. But let me stop there and see if that aligns to your thoughts with common challenges from an organizational perspective.
Yeah, I think the other thing I would add is, you know, we don't live in a one-dimensional time frame or time right now, right? So a lot of organizations have to comply with many different frameworks, right? Including ourselves. And I know that very well because I used to work on your team. And so I think when organizations have to face the grueling task to harmonize all of those different frameworks, they find that they get very overloaded, right? They're trying to do PCI, they're trying to do HIPAA, they're trying to do NIST 153, all the different frameworks that they have to comply with. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but how do you operationalize and make that efficient, right? Because you can't just say, well, I'm going to start with an 853 assessment today, and in 3 months, I'll move on to a CJIS assessment, or another few months, I'll move on to another one. And so I think layering them into a control set and combining them is really powerful, because then you can go and implement one control that satisfies multiple frameworks versus the other way, which is completely inefficient to do so. And, you know, I think that is where CIS controls really helps people, because we mapped over 25 different frameworks through, we have a chief cartographer that we call him internally, and he does a great job at mapping the controls to all those different frameworks so that you can go and bridge the gap between it and make it more efficient for your cybersecurity program.
Definitely. Definitely. Mapping makes so much sense, right? Because like you say, that it's not just one thing where we have to follow necessarily. It's a multitude. And either that's through awareness on day one to be aware of those frameworks that are required. But as you say, again, we kind of see it. We're like on this journey element and mapping, and we're doing cartography now. And Thomas Sager does a phenomenal work in that space of looking across all of the different frameworks and necessarily doing an alignment. So necessarily the compelling argument of one control actually then is multiplied across many different frameworks that allow you to not only progress in terms of CIS control implementation, but across other parentheses, as it were, of other frameworks in this space as well. And you'd mentioned a few. I mean, it becomes an acronym soup at that point, Felicia, right? It's you try to remember the combinations of letters, numbers, and where they all fit and what do they apply to. But
yeah. And I just wanted to add one more thing too, is another challenge that I see is governance, right? Because a lot of people just kind of want to get in. They want to get into the playground and go on the swing, right? But they're like, first, I have to know the rules. Like, what am I supposed to do? Or how am I supposed to operate the swing? And that kind of thing. It's really the foundational building blocks for your program. So, you know, I think the other thing is, once you have that documentation to support the governance of your program, is to have the leadership buy-in, right? Because you could write all these wonderful documents and they might sound great to you. And then you go and your leadership doesn't believe in it, or they're not socializing it. And you kind of have to have that buy-in in order for the organization at large to adopt it, right? Otherwise, it just becomes shelfware.
Exactly.
And that's not good.
Now, again, it becomes, again, another resource that is not contributing to necessarily success. And you want to have everything in that direction, right? We want to have all elements pointing in the same direction at the same time so that we can achieve a greater impact quickly. And again, it's not all about velocity, but you necessarily want to be in a position that you can assess and address the your capability. There's limited resources in this space, right? Everybody will, you know, say that I need more people, I need more time, I need more budget, those types of things. And so you really want to get those in alignment that can help contribute really to an overall success. And one of the things, again, we're on this journey, epic together, Felicia, but is the thought of, you know, cybersecurity is not necessarily this destination, right? It's a continuous journey. You're never done. It's just that you're getting to greater levels of either maturation or completion of certain elements that lead you to other, you know, vulnerability, threat management, and now looking at operationalizing and bringing in those tenants that really then start you down a path of, you know, that this is continuous. We've got to, once we've started kind of getting that ball rolling, it's just leads us to newer endeavors, but again, to protect and minimize those threats. Does that align with your thoughts as well, Felicia?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, right? It's continuous monitoring or auditing at its best, because you could implement your inventory from day one, but is it staying stagnant? Probably not. If you have a large company of 500 people, there's devices flying in and out of that company probably on a minute-by-minute basis, right? Depending on how you're managing your network. So I think it's important to understand that, like you said, your journey's not really done once you get it. it's a continuous process or iterative process to make sure that it's implemented and that it stays updated or whatever, you know, attribute it needs to be over time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now I think we've kind of gone into step one on our journey together in this podcast, Felicia, but when we look at the CIS controls, we look at prioritization. And when we're thinking about initially prioritized for an organization, why is that important? And are there any steps that you would recommend to not only assess, and we've gone through, you know, the SysRAM and the CSAT type capabilities, but when we think about the controls and taking that first step into them, any thoughts that you can provide our listeners in that space?
Yeah, so in my opinion, it really started in version 7.1 is where we really turned the road as far, or the corner, as far as where we want to take the controls. So we came out with the concept of implementation groups, IG1 you had mentioned, and IG2 and IG3. And each safeguard has a specific implementation group assigned to it. And really the spirit of the implementation groups is that you don't need to do every single thing on day one, right? You start with the basics and then you grow from there. And so we focus on IG1, which we call essential cyber hygiene. And these are actions that organizations should take no matter what, right? Even the Fortune 500 organizations need to start with inventorying your devices or inventorying your data, very foundational building blocks that you need in order to do those more sophisticated things like secure configurations, right? So when I hear organizations sometimes start talking about penetration testing or really complex stuff, that's great that you're thinking about that, but have you done the basics first, right? Because if you haven't done the basics, pen testing is going to be a really tough challenge to get under your belt if you haven't done those. So that's why we really recommend that organizations start there. There's 56 safeguards in IG1, and then that builds upon IG2, which is 74 safeguards, and then IG3 has 23, so it totals 153. But the implementation groups are based on the risks that the organization faces, the resources that are available to them. I actually just did a whole paper on like all the factors that play into selecting an implementation group. It's not a one size fits all either. You might have an organization that has a very sensitive set of systems that require more control than other ones, right? So you might not be just an IG1. You might be an IG1 with some IG2 systems, right? That you need to protect additionally, depending on what you are facing.
Absolutely. Now, in order to do this, I think it's very important to have really leadership support in terms of thinking about how we're going to follow this path. Because as I mentioned before, it's not just we'll do cybersecurity today, and then next week we'll do something else. No, it's once you kind of take that day one, step one into this type of analysis, situational awareness or risk awareness, things like that. Why is that so important when we want to have leads supporting us and being able necessarily from the top down provide their support because of the importance? And I think that maybe aligns to some of it to give it one strategic priority, but it's really in this space, and you'd mentioned it before, Felicia, this is really a time of velocity, and we're starting to see where it's not just a technology risk or it's not just an IT issue. These are business processes that necessarily are encompassed in a cybersecurity need for an ability to mitigate risk to threats and vulnerabilities within that process structure. Does that make sense and align with some of your thoughts on the importance of leadership?
Yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, I was at a conference and the person who was speaking made us repeat that cybersecurity is a business decision, right, or issue. It's not just some separate section of that's completely offset or shouldn't be, rather. It needs to be incorporated into the business. And, you know, in my opinion, leadership is the backbone to getting your program off the ground and running. Without it, it becomes very difficult for your program to move forward, right? Especially when you see that security or leadership is anti-security, because then that's even worse, right? Those are the things where it's like, well, I'm not going to give you money because why do we need that? We've never had a ransomware attack. If I haven't seen it, then it's not real or it won't happen to me. And, you know, these are the organizations, the same ones you see in the headlines where it's like 5 months down the road, they get breached or attacked. And then all of a sudden they're throwing all this money at security, whether it be because they want to or because they have to, right? Whether it be from a law or just because it's the right thing to do. And so it's easy to fluff off the security practices, in my opinion, if you don't understand the implications that it can cause. And that's why having that risk-based approach is important, because then you can show and demonstrate to leadership, like, hey, if we don't do this, you know, this is what could happen. And then perhaps at that point, it starts, the eyes start opening, like, oh, that's why I need to do that. Okay, that makes sense. And I think explaining it in layman's terms is important too, because not everyone is going to speak technical. You might find leadership that doesn't. And depending on the industry that you're in and the types of skill sets that are in leadership. So you have to get on their level to think like them in order to get what you need.
Absolutely. Now, I think, again, a lot of ways in which to really think about communicating is the, it is one of the things I call it, is translate it into a financial element, as it were. And that leads us into a very important section. And Felicia, why I really wanted to talk to you about this as part of this program for Dollar One. And you've done some phenomenal work in the space. And if we translate necessarily the risk or the opportunity for an impact and change that into financial figures, you know, if we're breached, this is how we would classify the cost of a single record. And these are how many records we have. And if they're lost, here's all the things we would need to do to rectify that situation and the projects we'd need to put in play. If we pay this now versus then, this is how we can mitigate that risk. This is the return on that investment to protect ourselves in this area. And I often find it, and to your point, is it's a shame when we have to use case studies in order to get our point across and say we don't want to be the next company, you know, that's on the front page of the New York Times was, you know, one I was always given. And it's those are potent in terms of examples, but it really gets down to when we're spending that first dollar and the cost implications of implementing the controls and really the work you had done. And if you could just go through the work and some of the motivations that brought that work to light, and then how organizations should utilize your work in order to move and effectively budget for the implementation of elements of control management.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. So this is a unique project because we tried to capture how much it could cost to implement IG1 of the controls. And it sounds, I won't say it sounds easy because it really doesn't sound easy, and it wasn't easy. But to our knowledge, no framework has tried to put a dollar sign on security. You see it in the news where they talk about how much an incident costs after the fact, right? The cleanup and all that stuff. But rarely do you hear about how much it might cost to prevent the incident. So, you know, that's why we really wanted to publish this research, because wouldn't it be great to say to leadership, hey, if you do $1 million of preventative, you know, action to prevent an incident from happening, you won't have to pay $4 million then to go deal with the fallout after the fact between legal costs and all that kind of stuff. So how the paper is structured is we developed three IG1 profiles, or think of them as tiers, and organizational attributes were assigned to these three tiers. So tools are priced in many different ways. And so often it's comparing apples to oranges when you look at all these tools. But what we try to do is assign these attributes so that we could go through and price the tools, hypothetically, as if we were an organization trying to procure them. Now, I will say that, you know, it doesn't incorporate costs like labor or integration or any of those other costs. And that is something that we recognize. It's just very difficult to put a price tag on that from our perspective, right? Because your organization knows it best. You're going to vary based on geographical location, all that kind of stuff, pricing. So we try to do it this way to standardize the pricing because of the tools that are priced in many different ways. And we researched about 200 tools, a combination of commercial, open source, no cost tools to come up with that approximate cost. And it's important also to keep in mind that no tool is created equal, right? So there are trade-offs with using things like open source software, where you probably have a lot more integration involved, right? A lot more engineering resources that need to be put into play. And that equals money, right? And no cost resources are great for smaller businesses because there's no cost, but you also have to consider that it might be some XYZ developer that you've never heard of. And is the software vulnerable? Is it even getting any updates? Is it from 20 or 2000? and you're thinking it's a great thing to use now and it's 2025. So, I think there's no perfect tool out there. It's just what's right for the business based on what they have to work with. The other thing too is, you know, as far as budgeting efficiently, some things to keep in mind is that one tool can satisfy multiple safeguards. So we all know Microsoft, right? They're a big player in the industry, and you can often buy the Microsoft suite and hit a lot of those safeguards right just from one tool. There's obviously, you don't want all your eggs in one basket. So making sure that you have defense in depth and all that fun stuff is important. But you can also find too that you have the tools that you already need or can add on things with what you have, right? You don't necessarily need to go procure 50 different tools to meet the safeguards. And the other thing too is, you know, based on our research, what we came up with is that our estimate is obtaining and deploying those tools can or should be less than 20% of the IT budget or cybersecurity budget for any size of enterprise. I will say, though, that keep in mind, IT budgets and cybersecurity budgets can sometimes meld together, right? So your asset inventory that can very much be used for incident response is probably going to be under the IT budget, right? Whereas potentially a security tool is going to be under the security budget if you have two separate teams. So keeping in mind that, you know, depending on your organizational structure, budgets can look very different.
Absolutely. And I think what was so pivotal about that report, Felicia, was like when you were reviewing it, I got a first chance to look at it. I was like, I've never seen anything like this before, right? This sets a new precedent in understanding return on security investment, because now I've got a price. I'm not guessing. I'm not necessarily having to go out and assess 200 vendors in order to understand what a complete infrastructure of security control looks like. And so I think it opened up many, many doors, many conversations. And again, leading us back to that conversation with leadership, translating that into financial figures and risk and elements in that space, their vernacular, very, very important. And so again, wonderful work in the space and really opened up, I think, new doors for us to understand. And I think necessarily you mentioned that there are cost-effective tools, but there's also resource requirements that are part of that. Because it's open source necessarily then means potentially the support that you would get from, say, a commercial capability, they're not going to be the same, right? We can't measure the two together because there's different overhead with those requirements. But understanding that helps us make cost-effective decisions because it's not just purchase the tool, it sits on a shelf and then no one implements, waste of money. It's purchase the tool, here's the support we get, here's where we can operationalize that capability. Now we're starting to see risk reduction. And as you mentioned, there are a number of tools that it's not just one parenthetic of a control of any control framework, but we'll focus on the CIS controls that fit into necessarily multiple controls. There are functions and services that are either developed, integrated through merger and acquisition into a tool that is a suite of capability. Now, I would harness this fact, and again, it may be one that listeners and yourself have heard, that there's no silver bullet necessarily in cybersecurity. So it is a combination of implementation of certain tools in order to create you know, either defense in depth or a broad spectrum of security control requires the use of multiple utility, multiple tools. Again, this is going to be dependent on your industrial parenthetic, the size of the organization, et cetera. So, Felicia, when you were looking at this and we were thinking about resources, was there certain things that you saw in terms of the research that you did was there is cost effective, but also there's, you know, trade-offs. Did that factor into some of your thoughts as you built out this work?
Yeah, actually, there's some additional research that we did with MSPs and cloud service providers. And one of the things I noticed is the swing in price can really differ with cloud service providers. So much that, you know, a lot of cloud service providers charge from the data usage or storage that you're using or storing. And so I think that's a big consideration for any organization looking for certain tools and options. Like, certainly service providers offer great flexibility and allow you to focus your efforts elsewhere and having somebody else manage it. But keeping in mind that, you know, as you lose some of that control, right, there are trade-offs. So whether it be higher prices due to data storage or, you know, name it, and that could potentially be a trade-off when you move to those kinds of models. So I think that's another thing. Like, for example, data management. A lot of cloud offerings have DLP. But for an IG1 organization, do they need a DLP? It's not an IG1 safeguard, but are they sort of pigeonholed, so to speak, into getting that because it's the option that they have? So I think that there's going to be pros and cons to any of it. And it's really what's appropriate for your organization and what you're allowed or able to spend within your budget, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break. Don't know how to meet the standard of reasonable cybersecurity? Well, you won't get there by putting a fancy lock on the server room door.
Right, Sean. CIS Secure Suite comes with integrated tools and resources for implementing a reasonable cyber defense program.
Now, let's not forget about testing. You can also use a CIS Secure Suite membership to evaluate the reasonableness of your cyber defenses using risk quantification.
And this will help you to comply with U.S. and state data privacy laws and show you've implemented the necessary security measures to avoid liability in the event of a data breach.
And now through April 30th, you can save up to 20% on a new membership using promo code RCD25.
So, want to make your cyber defense program reasonable?
Well, you need a CIS Secure Suite membership to build and test it.
Visit cisecurity.org/CIS-SecureSuite to learn more.
Thank you, and let's jump back into the episode. Felicia, it was wonderful having you as part of the podcast. And again, thank you for being available so close, you know, to a very important date for you and your family. And so we wish you all the best. Thank you so much again for your expertise and being part of this world and contributing all these thoughts to making cybersecurity palatable, as well as making organizations more secure. So thank you so much for your contributions.
You're really welcome. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. And thank you to the audience. Make sure to send your best wishes to Felicia, podcast@cisecurity.org. We're also on YouTube at The CI Security. Check us out there. Drop us your comments, questions, or concerns. Remember to subscribe in all the usual ways for new episodes on Wednesdays. Every Wednesday, there's a new episode. And be sure to tune in for episodes like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.